Welcome to the Full of Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 1:03 PM. That is Pacific Summer Time. Today is November 2nd. Oil prices reversed an earlier decline to post an upside key day reversal today, closing on the high of the day. Over the weekend, there was speculation that Libya was going to increase its supply by about 1 million barrels a day, but then on later on in Monday, Russia came out and said that they were willing to potentially at least delay any increase in their supply. So the market responded favorably to that. Then this is, I think, rather important because with this upside key, provided we get some follow through tomorrow, it enhances the potential that we've got a higher reaction low. And if this is the extent to which oil prices pull back, then that would be a very benign scenario indeed. One thing that's obviously going to be on the minds of investors as we head into the election tomorrow in the USA is what happens with volatility. It was in marginally negative territory today. We've plenty of examples historically where volatility rises into the election and falls subsequently. And the rationale for that is obvious, that with greater uncertainty, volatility rises, and with more certainty, regardless of what the outcome is, there is a certainty that's been attached to the decision, and then volatility declines. When we think about this year, which is obviously unconventional, then the potential is that there won't be an answer. But when we begin to think about it a little bit more critically, then one of the states that will get a quick answer will be Florida, and whichever party wins Florida is likely to win the election. I don't think that's changed. Then there's also going to be some questions about what happens in North Carolina and tight Senate races there. That's another state that reports quickly, and that'll give us some insight into what happens in terms of state decisions. So there is the potential that the market will have enough of information to come up with a determination on who wins the election by the end of tomorrow night. So that's part of the reason why volatility did not move higher in an aggressive manner in here today. Then when we think about the NASDAQ, it was spent most of the day in negative territory, but paired the decline towards the close. Amazon continues to unwind its overbought condition relative to the trend mean. It's right in the region of the lower side of this range that's been forming for the last 4 months. They anticipate turning over $100 billion in this year's holiday season. I don't see any reason why they won't be able to do that. Apple anticipates a similar surge in demand for its products. Both shares are now unwinding their overbought conditions relative to their respective trend means. This continues to look like a rotation. And when we think about, well, if it's a rotation, what's doing well? Well, it's industrials. Honeywell, for example, rebounded really rather impressively. When we think about the acceleration that's been going on in Thermo Fisher, well, then this is pretty much in between both. It's a highly innovative company, but very much more on the industrial side or of the healthcare sector. So it's splitting it down the middle. But then when we think about companies like General Electric, which announced that they were going to have a profit in this quarter, it was in positive territory as well. We can then think, of course, of the embattled energy sector, and Chevron was in positive territory today. It hasn't quite broken that sequence of lower rally highs since June, but certainly more positive action over the last three sessions, and that was a small upside key 3 days ago. When we then think about what we can anticipate from the election, well, I think that the majority of businesses are anticipating social disruption, particularly around West Los Angeles, where I live. We see that there are empty supermarket shelves. There is plenty of evidence of businesses that are boarding up in anticipation of a great deal of social unrest, regardless of what the result is. Let's not forget that California is unlikely to vote for anything but Democrats almost across the boards. So it's not as if local election results are going to be the cause of unrest, but rather that we're still in an incredibly uncertain environment politically and socially. And while the stock market is continuing to respond to liquidity, then not everyone has equal access to that liquidity. I think that's particularly relevant when we think about the bond markets, because yield curve spread came back below the 70 basis point level in here today. The 10-year yield was softer by about 2 basis points, certainly not in a dynamic fashion, or it hasn't pulled back in a dynamic fashion. The reality is that without clear evidence of support for the market from the Federal Reserve, then we're likely to see yields moving higher. Well, then when we think about the UK, well, it's really quite likely that we're going to see additional downward pressure on yields, not least because they've introduced another lockdown. This one will have a timestamp on it, so that, and this is, I think, a feature of the majority of what's going on in Europe and in all the countries that have introduced additional lockdowns, that they're going to expire at the beginning of December, and the entire rationale for it is to try and save the Christmas season. The vast majority of retail operations depend on the Christmas season for profitability for the year. They can pretty much do okay for the first 11 months, but they need to do well in the last month of the year. And I can certainly see, for example, for Mrs. Tracy's online business, that December is 3 times bigger than November, and November is the second best month of the year. When we look at 10-year gilts, the yield compressed by 4 basis points. It's encountered resistance in the region of the trend mean on multiple occasions, and it's increasingly likely that the Bank of England is going to experiment with negative interest rates. So we have clear evidence that the UK is quite likely to engage in additional fiscal spending, but almost certainly going to have additional monetary support as well. Well, that surge in supply of pounds it weighed on the pound in here today. That's why I think that it's unlikely that we're going to see very big moves by some of the major cross rates. The euro, for example, was in slightly negative territory. It's back in the region of the lows from September, but this is more evidence of competitive currency devaluation than any other factor, really. When we think about what the primary objectives are of the Federal Reserve, the ECB, the Bank of England, the Swiss National Bank, or the Bank of Japan for that matter, they're all interested in ensuring that they don't have a strong currency. Whereas when we look at China, then it's the only country that's going to have positive growth this year. The renminbi was in slightly positive territory in here today. And also we've got the fact that China is engaging in some really rather impressively sized IPOs right now. It's looking increasingly likely that Ant Financial is going to price well above the initial IPO level, potentially as much as 50%. Then when we think about the mainland markets, the CSI 300 has steadied following the pullback on Friday, but it's still very much range-bound, and as long as it's going sideways, it's unwinding that overbought condition relative to the trend mean. Gold has a rather similar trajectory. It's been ranging now for the last 3 months. It was in positive territory today, coming back up towards this $1,900 level, and it's unwound most of the overbought condition relative to the trend mean. And the strength in gold is responding to the clear determination of central banks to devalue the purchasing power of their respective currencies. Now, when we think about some of the other commodities, well, copper prices were also in positive territory and holding this $3 level. And this is also an upside key reversal, although rather small. So we would really need to see additional upside follow through in order to confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. Then when we think about the outlook for a vaccine, I remain very much of the opinion that the primary utility for a vaccine is in terms of the ability to shape public opinion. And when we think about what the mortality rates are, then we know that it's 99.9% sure that anyone under the age of 50 will not die from coronavirus, that the average age of fatalities is in the region of 78. Well, we're now getting increasing stories rather than people talking about death, because the death argument has been exhausted. They're talking about slow COVID, that one may have a range of symptoms that last 4 months after the initial infection. And that's been used as the latest rationale for the lockdowns. But what we've also seen is that people who do have long COVID, they still recover from it, that this is not a permanent condition. And even though there may be a reasonably high percentage, as many as 10% of patients experience lengthy deleterious symptoms, it doesn't result in mortality, and they do get better over time. But the reality is that regardless of what the arguments are, we are back in lockdowns in the vast majority of Europe, for example, and then Australia is also still enforcing rather strict lockdowns in Victoria. And the clear rationale is that they're going to be unable to remove the lockdowns until there's a vaccine. Unfortunately, politicians don't like admitting they're wrong, and the last thing they want to be seen to be doing is continuing to flip-flop. Then the reality is that in order for them to walk back the social distancing guidelines, they're going to want to have a vaccine. And it is likely that they're going to have a vaccine. And we've seen that Pfizer delayed the release of their data beyond the end of October, and it's likely now in November. Moderna's is also ready for or expected to be delivered in November, and there will be others in December. So it's very likely there will be a vaccine approved by the end of this year and roll out next year. When we think about emerging markets, then they are likely to benefit most acutely from the resumption of economic activity. The Nifty index is right in the region of its peaks and the upper side of the range that persisted from late 2018. Vietnam has long been singled out as one of the primary beneficiaries of migration of manufacturing capacity away from China, and it continues to rebound. The Thai market has been rocked by protests against the aristocracy and the monarchy. So that has weighed on the stock market of late, but it rebounded very impressively, and it's really only a question of when does it find support above the lows posted back in March. Continue to think that emerging markets are most likely to be beneficiaries of the end of the coronavirus scare for one simple reason. They are not nearly as burdened by the massive debt loads that have been taken on to combat the virus in some of the more developed markets. And that means that they are in a better position to do better afterwards. And then, of course, we have the additional point that emerging markets tend to do best when the dollar is weak. And the Asia dollar index has broken its downtrend. So, as long as that index is continuing to advance, then it's likely to create an attractive environment for emerging markets from the perspective of big international investors. One of the primary reasons that they have been so eager to invest in the USA has been because of the carry in terms of the interest rate and the higher growth rate relative to developed markets, and then, of course, performance. Well, we don't have the interest rate and we don't have the currency in favor of international investors any longer. And therefore, the growth rate is more attractive in emerging markets. They may now have the ability to do better from a currency perspective as well. And then that could also deliver performance. I think the best example of a currency that did well in the last commodity bull market was the Brazilian real, because the currency doubled from the low in 2002 to the peak in 2008, and it's now right in the region of its lows. It's substantially weaker than it was all the way back in 2002, and demand for its exports are increasing. And that's particularly true of demand from China. So there is the potential that we may see some of these emerging market and particularly commodity producing currencies starting to bottom in the not too distant future, and that they will be well positioned to benefit from an evolving commodity-led bull market, where there is going to be a clear determination by governments everywhere to invest in reflation. That's going to be equally true of developed markets as it is of emerging markets. And now the Brazilian Bovespa was in negative territory in a rather dynamic manner in here today. So we're not out of the woods just yet, and it's a bit too early to sound the all clear in terms of emerging market stock market performance just yet. But they are likely to benefit as we come out of the coronavirus, which may not really occur until the beginning of 2021. And I think with that, I will leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.